the marking out of civilization as the foundational subject, pole, and actor of contemporary world politics is the most promising ideological approach for those who want to objectively evaluate the real state of affairs in world politics, for those who are striving to select an adequate toolkit for political science's generalizations of the new era, the era of postmodernity, and for those who are striving to defend their own unique identity in the conditions of a progressive blending, and also of the real attacks of network globalization. We turn now to page 104 on postmodernism and the synchronistic understanding of civilization, which Dugin will contrast to this diachronic, unidirectional, progressive view of civilization that he just discussed and that he ultimately will reject. Synchronistic means here that civilization is not a phase that follows from earlier historical phases in time in accordance with progressive models of Enlightenment historicism. Civilization, rather than following savagery and barbarism in time, coexists with them in time. It is together with them in time. They all exist together. So how do we think about civilization once we reject the presuppositions of historical optimism, universalism, and progressivism? Okay, if civilization is not the peak of a process leading from savagery to barbarism to enlightenment, then what is it? Well, Dugin is open to exploring this question with all the theoretical resources that he mentioned earlier in his hypotheses about the subject of the fourth political theory. And in principle, we can say all approaches except for the liberal one are on the table. And in fact, in the bonus supplementary material to this session, I'm going to walk you through several interpretations of civilization that he offers in another text of his. The key point here, though, everything is on the table except the progressive interpretation. Now, on page 105, Dugin begins to introduce some adjustments to and reversals of that progressive unidirectional model. So here he says, civilization does not replace savagery and barbarism, but is based on savagery and barbarism, displaced to the unconscious level through repression. And the more they're repressed, the more powerful they become, because the harder it is to track their operation. As Dugin writes, this explains the striking difference between the historical practices of nations and societies, full of warfare, oppression, cruelty, and wild outbursts of terror, abounding in aggravating psychological disorders, and the pretensions of reason to a harmonious, peaceful, and enlightened existence under the shadow of progress and development. So, why do you have this contrast between talking about progress and development on one hand and warfare, oppression, cruelty, and outbursts of terror on the other? Because you haven't overcome savagery and barbarism, you've just repressed them. In this respect, the modern era is not only an exception, he writes, but the peak of the intensification of this discrepancy between the pretensions of reason and the bloody reality of world wars, ethnic cleansing, and historically unprecedented mass genocides of entire races and peoples, he writes. And in terms of savagery, modernity possesses the most perfect technical means invented by civilization, right up to weapons of mass destruction. That's from page 105. So again, civilization becomes here even the vehicle for an ever more intense expression of savagery and barbarism. Civilization, to repeat, does not replace its opposites, but suppresses them into the unconscious, which continues to exert its effect in other ways. Dugin's next task is to try to further deconstruct the notion of civilization. He's already suggested that we move from the progressive to the synchronic, and here he has something else to add to our consideration to help undermine the notion that he's criticizing here. He attempts to do that by starting from the commonly held opinion that civilization is an inclusive universality, that it's theoretically open for those who want to join from the outside, and that this inclusive universality is contrasted with exclusive particularity and seems at first glance to be its opposite. But when a civilization extends and encounters other civilizations, it must decide whether, on one hand, to drop the idea of the universality of its own civilization, or, on the other hand, to ascribe to the other civilization the category of barbarian or savages. You see, If civilization A is expanding and it encounters another civilization, it can either say, oh, so there's a plurality of what I'm calling civilizations, or it can say, these are uncivilized savages and barbarians, I need to civilize them. In the first case, you get, therefore, a synchronic model of a general system of multiple civilizations. More often, though, you get the second case, which sees in the other civilization a barbaric particularity that needs to be brought under the universality of civilization A. But in doing so, of course, civilization A is not opposing exclusive particularity, but rather simply intensifying its own exclusive particularity. You see, if it's civilizing the barbarians, it's treating itself as exclusive and particular, whereas by assumption, it had been open and universal and confronting other exclusive particularities. So it's a self-undermining logic. It either leads to the plurality of civilizations or it leads to the view that it's being hypocritical. Now, in a tribal society, the exclusive particularity is instilled in part through rites of initiation, in which the members learn about the foundations of tribal mythology and adopt the tribal identity. A similar type of thing happens on the civilizational level through religious institutions and later educational and ideological ones. Now, even this rough preliminary deconstruction of the concept of civilization shows, for Dugin, that big collectivities of developed people united in a civilization essentially simply repeat the archetypes of the behavioral and moral systems of savages. They still have rites of initiation, they still have an exclusive particularity. That's his idea here, that they're structurally similar. Now, they're not identical, but he's identifying for us the similarity in order to undermine the notion of their being open and inclusive. Hence, Dugin writes, endless and even bloodier wars, double standards in international politics, fits of passion in private life, and the constantly broken ethical and normative codes of moderate and rational societies, from page 108. In that sense, civilization is the lie of universalism that pretends to mask the truth of exclusive particularity, but does so falsely and hypocritically. So now we have to read a passage from page 114, which shows just how important the concept of civilization is for Dugin when it's stripped from its unidirectional or technical interpretation. Or put differently, just how important the idea of the plurality of civilizations is for Dugin. The marking out of civilization as the foundational subject, pole, and actor of contemporary world politics is the most promising ideological approach for those who want to objectively evaluate the real state of affairs in world politics, for those who are striving to select an adequate toolkit for political science's generalizations of the new era, the era of postmodernity, and for those who are striving to defend their own unique identity in the conditions of a progressive blending, and also of the real attacks of network globalization. In other words, the appeal to civilizations, in the plural, allows one to organically fill the ideological vacuum that was formed after the historical crisis of all theories that had opposed liberalism, and also after the internal crisis of liberalism itself. Civilization as a concept construed in the contemporary philosophical context proves to be the center of a new ideology, he writes. This ideology can be described as multipolarity.